You know, you have we have deficiencies, right? We know our deficiencies, and we know that there are things that inhibit our ability to analyze our situation. But there can be no question that by international comparisons, Barbados is a highly competitive tourism place. And so I go back to Shane's point that we need to focus on the problems that we need to fix, and the problems that we need to fix urgently to address the real ills of the economy. It's a mixed economy. It's not a perfect economy, but the things that are working well, among them, tourism is number one.
The scariest thing or the disagreement between two of y'all, because depending on which of y'all are right, they will tell me what will happen to Barbados and Barbados' success going forward. When they look at the tourism product, I think that brand Barbados is very strong. Brand Barbados. Barbados out there, when people talk about, I like to go to the beautiful island of Barbados, they see it in movies as well. But when they look at the actual tourism product, people talk about the aginess of it, in terms of it's not diversified. It has people, there are a lot of repeat visitors who would come, and as they age, it doesn't offer things for the persons coming in now. There's other things in terms of the cruise tourism. When Barbados is call number 5 and 6, they picked up all the Chinese things coming through. So I heard all these,
Exactly,
on
and they're
site
all
things,
wrong,
and you know what I mean? And people
they're,
have this impression that the tourism
it's,
industry is
but that
crumbling.
is but that is
You
that
know?
is that is that is the story that was being has been
Allowed to be
that
put out there.
but that is the old story, right? And the remarkable thing about our tourism is that, you know, 10, 15 years ago, we had all these arguments that the product was mature and we were in decline and so on.
Correct.
And what our private tourism entrepreneurs have done is that they have enhanced the product, and they have developed new attractions, new things to spend. Lime Grove, for example, has created a new upmarket retail experience. St. Nicholas Abbey has developed into one of the world's greatest, most richest experiences as visitor experiences. You have the Harrison Cave, you have the submarine, you have sports tourism, Bushy Park. So I'm saying that what our tourism entrepreneurs have done is that they have reinvented Barbados. 10 years ago, people were saying that investment in hotels in Barbados was not profitable. I always thought that that was a real nonsense. It is not profitable if you invest in the wrong kind of hotel.
Wait,
But
hold
Sandals has come in, and they have turned the things on their
when
head.
you're shaking head, how can you respond to very strong points there?
We were saying, you know, when I took up my job in 2009, that, you know, there were all these hotels in need of refurbishment and so on. You look all around the place and you see refurbishment has taken place. Investors are coming to our shores on an ongoing
I see a
basis,
number of them on the West Coast and South Coast with for
exactly.
sale signs on them too. I
Uh-huh.
see a lot of them with for sale signs on them and shut down and dilapidated too. Just to balance it out.
No. But, you know, the problem that we have is the problem that Shane identified. That our public services, the approval processes are a problem. And in the current circumstance, investors are worried about the exchange rate. And, you know, the prospect of a devaluation is a big no-no for investors. You know, until you remove that specter, you're not going to get the investment interest that is out there.
Come in, Wayne, before we go back to the lines.
No, there is I would say a divide in terms of how you analyze what is there. Now, Barbados still has a problem attracting hotels. Wait, Barbados has to compete with all air destinations in Northern Caribbean. Well, Barbados is like half air destinations. We struggle in the summer and that kind of stuff. So we have to be realistic in terms of our competitive positions. We cannot seriously say that we are number one competitive destination and you have tourism only half the year. Will other destinations to the North American Caribbean have tourism all year? So what you say? So I come back to the point that the OECD and the people from Lagos, they can do their reporting. But I think that the Caribbean need to have a competitive report based and looked at from the eyes of the consumer. For the customers. And then you'll have a different set of rankings to me, which is more realistic. In terms of the Barbados in its attributes, one of the problems that we face when we compete against destinations like Aruba and the others in the north, we don't have enough branded product. That was always the issue in Barbados, not having enough branded hotels. It's always an issue. And that would and always would have impacted on our growth going forward. And I think that we need to put in perspective here what has happened in the major global economies, especially the US, that have driven this march of outward tourism across the whole Caribbean. It's not just Barbados have benefited from large arrivals from the US. It's a consequence of the economic situation becoming better. And the question is, how would we capitalize and maximize on that? That's the question. But in terms of the issue being settled, I am not sure. We still have those issues of a solution for the summer is a staycation for hotels. That can't be a solution because it doesn't drive foreign exchange. It drives away foreign exchange because if you have to support the hotel by feeding all the local guests, you still got to import food to supplement. So I think that the model that we have, while it's improving, we still have to look at how we would improve the summer, how we would get the summer going. There seems to be a feeling in some quarters that it is settled. Barbados is a destination only in the winter, except the summer, and that's it.
Let's go back to the telephone line. So many questions are being raised, and I'm going to try to put them up between now and the latest at 12:30, and before we finish at quarter after one. Good afternoon and welcome. Just a reminder, we have Dr. Delisle Worrell with Mr. Wayne Lovell and Mr. Shane Lowe in studio, and this program is brought to you with the kind compliments of Williams Industries Incorporated.
Forbidden supplies, big or small, at Williams Metals we have it all.
Now is the time for you to fence your property with galvanized green, white, or brown chain link fencing and our brown band galvanized pole pipes, which are the longest lasting. We will give you a free estimate too on all your fencing materials.
So building supplies, big or small, at Williams Metals we have it all. At Williams Metals we have it all.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
7 minutes after noon, Brass Stats, you're on the air. Hello, Brass Stats Sunday.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, I want to start by where your last caller ended. And he said that previously, and I would like to believe I interpreted him right, that we were focusing more only on the winter. But the truth is, that has changed a lot. We are not only focusing on the winter, we are also focusing on the summer. And I think that when we went to South America, that is when the significant turnaround would have occurred in talks. And I honestly believe that now that we have been able to get COPA to come, that should solve some of our major problems within the summer period. Another thing I would like to say is that we and Barbados have to learn from our seniors, our experienced people. When we had the sugar industry, not only focus on the plantation, we focus on the smallholders. And that is why sometimes when I listen to discussions, I get the impression that some of our technocrats are losing the debate because they're still focusing on something that we do not have to worry about and not capturing what we can capture. For example, we have a golden opportunity to maximize our community effect. And those economists on the panel will tell you that the multiplier effect should be greater with community tourism than the normal tourism. And I think if Barbados can go back to the sugar industry approach, where we accommodate the small, and the sugar industry would have been small cane farmers, but in the tourism industry, it would be those community players, that we would do well to grow the tourism industry much faster. It pains me that we can have about 15,000 to 16,000 properties in Barbados not being used by the owners and not government properties. Eh? And we cannot recognize that that is a market, that is a market that we should target. Because growth is not measured by dollars. Growth is measured by units. And the more tourists we can get to come to Barbados, the greater the impact it will be on our growth. And you see, that is why we have been fooled over the years, because certain hotels, because they charge large rates and they bring a lot of revenue, we focus more on the revenue coming from those hotels without recognizing that if we were to focus a little more on community tourism, that we will get the multiplier effect from that and we will get the numbers to impact on our growth. And I want to stop there at this point, because we tend also to mix up revenue and foreign exchange. Because I keep telling people in Barbados that we tell people that an English potato is cheaper than a sweet potato, and that's because we measure it in Barbados dollars. But if we were to measure it on the impact of the foreign exchange being used, the sweet potato will be cheaper than the English potato. But we are selfish people.
Mm-hmm. Any reaction?
What?
No, I was just going to say that I think that is probably what the Airbnb has helped to do. Bring people not just into the larger hotels, but into the average Barbadian's home. And that person is able to, that tourist rather, is able to experience Barbados in a totally different way than if they had just gone to an all-inclusive hotel or some other hotel. So I think part of the challenge, of course, is being able to measure the impact of the Airbnb tourists vis-a-vis the other tourists, the person that will come and stay at a Hilton or a Sandals or wherever. But I can support the fact that having people...
No, I want you to stick a pen there, because you have made a very significant point. Because I hear a lot about spend in Barbados and how it's down and so on. That is utter foolishness. It is that we have not changed our system to capture community tourism. And we are doing it even with our foreign reserves. We liberate the market, and we are not appreciating that we have liberated the market. You remember there's a time when we used to speak a lot with Felix Kerr? You know why we had to speak, why we had to stop speaking about it? Because the dynamics changed. And the same thing is happening with our foreign reserves, and the same thing is happening with our spend. And we have to recognize that we can't use old methods to capture what is happening in a new dynamic market.
No, I would want to respond to the comment relating to the South American market. Now, as you are aware, we entered the Brazilian market and we lost the Brazilian market. Well, lost contact with the market through the demise or the closing off of the arrangement with Gol. And now we've gone to pursue another one or two other South American markets.
Copa is the one that we always wanted, though.
But fair enough. But here's the point, though. The point that I find that seem to be missing in the pursuit is that when I look at the travel patterns of those markets that you want to target, the Caribbean is not part of it. And let me make a very big point. It's akin to asking a Barbadian when he's planning his vacation. The choice is New York, Dominica, or Miami. Go to Dominica. It's not aspirational enough. And even though we are all Barbadians and we think highly of where we are, you still got to accept that if a Barbadian would prefer to go to the United States over Dominica, the same way South American travelers would prefer to go to the U.S. and those major capitals before they come to Barbados. And that's a fact.
Well, let me explain something here, right? That would appear so, because previously we had to operate on indirect flights. But if we were to get direct flights coming from South America
but
to Barbados,
but caller, please. But Gol was a direct flight from Brazil.
but you
it's only the latter stages that it stopped in Tobago.
But the truth is, Gaul was a direct flight. But the Gaul did not bring to the market what Copa will now bring.
What is that?
The multiplayer connections. You see, Copa is the airline of choice for the Caribbean, between Caribbean and South America. And one of the things I would tell you, I have done a lot of travel because of Habitat Street to South America. And the truth is, the South Americans would love to come to Caribbean, but they want reliability. And they're not prepared to go to North America then to come to Barbados. Because even though we tolerate it, they are not going to tolerate it. And that's something that we keep ignoring. Because we are quite prepared to fly over Barbados and then go one direction and come back to go the other direction. There are most travelers that will not do that. And that is why I mentioned to you that with Copa coming to the market, we should have a better management, more so than Gaul and Avianca and those airlines.
I want to read this one to you, Mr. Cameron. It says, Corey, please let Mr. Cameron know that if 5 persons visit his restaurant and just sit around, you gain little to nothing. But if those persons purchase food, he gains and smile. The same analogy applies to the tourism industry.
But you see, if 5 persons visit, and that is where we sometimes do stop thinking, it is the mere fact that they would have visited for a reason. And it is for us to ensure that when they visit, that we maximize it. Let me use the analogy as a cruise ship, because I hear a lot of foolishness as it relates to cruise ships too, and how they don't spend. But you know what? They take the taxis. So what we need now to do is to focus and ensure that those taxi guys don't focus on the short trips. Because even the captains have to tell them that they're underselling Barbados. And I must tell you, I've now seen a change. Because most of the cruise ship people don't get the opportunity to see true Barbados. And the focus must be on showing them true Barbados.
Remember that when we speak, especially today, I want us to match the commentary of what is with what should be in terms of bringing solutions. I'm going to read this one and let you respond as well. This one says, with regard to tourism, and I'm a regular cruise traveler, and what I see when I visit other Caribbean neighbors is a vast difference from what I see here in Barbados. Yes, we are obtaining the numbers, but what good are we doing with them? The encounter of the day visitor is minuscule. Once you set foot off the cruise ship, mostly what you're met with are the view of a containers, a few souvenir shops, and free Wi-Fi. Not to mention a long, uninteresting walk into town. There must be something that we can be done to improve this space.
Now, and the government has responded to that, and that is why they're doing work to correct that in the port. And another thing,
what is the work that's being done?
Well, I just mentioned it. Mm-hmm. They're building the new cruise terminal, and they're changing that so that you won't see the containers and so on. Also, I remember when Pelican was being constructed, I told them that they were doing it wrong side of the road. You have to understand that you have to track people. You have to ensure that when people leave the ship, that they walk through your manufacturing suppliers. And one of the things I want to say to you, and there's a proposal now that I have, because I don't believe that a place down, like you take down by the heliport, that the tour should have to be negotiating with cards. They should be negotiating with vendors, because there are the people who are producing our local product. And we need to find an area that when they get off the cruise ship, that they're exposed to all of our local manufacturers, you know, so that when they walk in to go into Bristol or walk in to go to Bay Street, that they have to go through and see what our people are offering. And I keep making the point, the Rastaman opposite the post office, that location is not the one for them that producing such good goods. They should be done by the heliport or something like that, you know.
I can't argue with those suggestions.
They should also, the taxi men should also be showing them rural Barbados. You see, we have a lot of pluses in Barbados and we do not and cannot appreciate them. Mm-hmm. In their country, when they hear about rural Barbados, they think about dilapidated houses and things like that. What the taxi men need to understand, that rural Barbados is a tourist attraction, something that they can show people where the ordinary people who used to live in the work in the field and so on, and show them now how they're living in stone, how the type of housing. And, you know, to us that is a minor point, but it's not. It is major. Because what is a negative for us is a plus for them.
Very good point.
Thank you. Let's take a couple WhatsApps and we get back to the lines. This one says, Sandal targets the U.S. market, and anyone will see the ads on U.S. TV like CNN, etc., hence the increase in U.S. arrivals. However, the connection to foreign exchange, there's none because that U.S. currency finds its way up out of our shores as payments are made outside. And in the all-inclusive, the tourists don't spend outside the restaurants, etc. On top of that, they get some ridiculous concessions. Any quick response before we go on?
Yeah, we want to respond to that quickly. I think that call, that WhatsApp
message.
I think that person needs to get some facts. Now, Sandals for a long time only had one hotel, 280 rooms. There's no way that Sandals could absorb these 100-something thousand tourists going to a hotel that only has 280 rooms up to a couple months ago. So you can't say that it's because of Sandals only. That's the point. It's not only Sandals.
And also, you know, I think that Sandals, you know, has actually done Barbados tremendous, you know, benefit in many ways. First of all, Sandals sets a standard. The standard of service, the standard of commitment to the customer experience that Sandals gives is something that we have to set as the standard for tourism in Barbados. Mm-hmm. So they set a good example. Secondly, the argument that their earnings are of no benefit to Barbados is an argument that is totally without merit. Sandals has to launder its things. It has to pay electricity, it has to pay taxes, it has to use domestic supplies, things that you know, distribution services and so on and so forth. Even if they import things, you have to get them to the doctor. So they have to make the same local purchases that any other hotel has to make. The only thing that they do not have to do is to actually bring in any surplus over and above their expenses. But they actually do. Because what do you think they build the other hotel with? They have invested those surpluses. So contrary to what everybody is saying, that they don't bring money in, they not only bring in what they have to do to meet all their expenses, and to pay all their taxes, they're bringing in addition. It is also a scandal to say that they only advertise in the U.S. market. You know, if you go to London, you see Sandals advertised on London taxis. If you go to Sydney, you see Sandals. Sandals is the Caribbean's worldwide brand. And they have set new standards for the all-inclusive market. Top end of the all-inclusive market.
Excellent. Let's bring in this next caller. Good afternoon and welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. I listened to the program, and every time I do hear a lot of generalizations, etc. But I think, Corey, that what we're looking for right now in terms of Barbados is some immediate short-term solutions, and I you make that point all the time. What we want to do is to see something that can be implemented within a time frame of at least 12 months from a new government taking office that can contribute to an immediate upgrade of our tourism plan. And I do think that, one, we need some casino gambling in this country. We need a casino. Just imagine a casino at North Point and one up by Sam Lawrence. And think in terms of the transportation and the build-up infrastructure that will happen between the two of these destinations. And then the cruise ship passengers. I don't think they leave a lot of discretionary income in the country. But I do believe that two casinos, and the people in the casinos would only play by using foreign currency, no local currency in the casinos. You're not telling locals they can't play. I don't feel locals should play anyhow. I worked in destinations like Sardinia and these other places that had casinos, and they were, those casinos were there only for foreign people to play. And the kind of drop that they could leave in the country is immediate. They could leave a lot more than sandals, for sure. I don't agree with the governor that sandals' contribution is that great. I've worked in all-inclusive hotels, and the governor knows very well that some of these hotels operate their property with nice cash, nice overdraft facilities from the banks. Sandals would bring in just enough to pay the daily consumption of wages and that kind of thing. But over and above that, I do believe that the concessions that are given to Sandals far outweigh the foreign exchange that they will bring. They will create a few jobs. But is that the kind of tourism that we need in Barbados? I worked in the tourism industry for a long time, and at that point, when tourism spend was much, much greater, we had less numbers, a much greater spend. The country wasn't built to carry the capacity that it is carrying now in terms of tourism arrivals. And that's why we're having the South Coast problem and a lot of other problems that will come by the usage of the infrastructure. So I think we should look at North Point as one. I want to put another point on the table. The Caribbean must be marketed as a destination. And I think we talk about this all the time, but I think Barbados has to start it. And we have to start a Caribbean package. But to do that effectively, we have to look at a market where people come to the destination, not necessarily for sea and sand. It worries me why we have never attracted African tourists. The last direct transportation between Africa and the Caribbean, I think, was the last slave ship that came over. As we look across Barbados on a daily basis, and we could look high in the air, we see we see some flights going from across Africa right into the South America or passing over Barbados to travel. How come we cannot attract any of those? The average African travels from 14 days to sometimes 2 months. They travel in large numbers, they travel with families, and the average spend is about $10 to every dollar that a Eurocentric tourism spend.
So in the first 12 months of administration taking office, two of the main innovative ideas you would like to see by any new administration is casinos and marketing the Caribbean as a whole. And I would throw a third one in there, marketing to the Africans. Now, we just got 3 minutes before
one other
news.
Mm-hmm. In every parish in this country,
that's four.
Mm-hmm. I am telling you that there is a possibility to have a unique community tourism project. Mm-hmm. Everyone. I could start one in West Terrace immediately. I could do one in there if any first 3 months of a government taking office and impact on that entire West Coast. Sandals is good for Barbados, but Sandals must be regulated. Otherwise, it will take over the whole place, and we will have an all-inclusive product that doesn't have a heavy discretionary spend. All we need more properties like the Sandy Lanes and those that are in the area where we can get the spend from them. I know what the average spend of all those properties are. I work with them.
Well, I want to thank you. We got to head to the news. That is Timothy Boyce, by the way. He's the guy who would have brought Crane Beach and King's Beach as well here. And I want to thank you for those ideas you put on the table. Now, remember, we're going to go over to the latest from the Starcom Network News. And when we come back, I want us to focus in more on the other parts of the economy. I have no apology for spending so much time on tourism, as it is hailed as the number one economic engine for Barbados. Things like foreign direct investment, investment and offshore activity and so on is things that we need to touch on. But I still want to look at the issue of what the first budget in the next administration should look like. And in relation to some of the things we mentioned in terms of the public sector reduction and those things, I think we have to put them squarely on the table. So you have that to look forward to with President of the Barbados Economic Society, Mr. Shane Lowe, a tourism researcher and economist himself, Mr. Wayne Lovell, and immediate past president of the Central Bank of Barbados, Dr. Deloyle World. I'm your host. Remember, we come back right after the news from the latest, from the Starcom Network News. Before 1, just a reminder that this Brass Tax Sunday is brought to you with the kind compliments of Williams Industries Incorporated. It's a price, big or small, a brilliant metals, we have it
all. Angles, flats, cement and doors, lumber, windows and much, much more. Get all your lumber needs from us. We have number one treated pine, all different types of plywood, V-joint, siding board and concrete board. In addition, we have grade 3 2x4s and form ply for boxing. Big or small, a brilliant metals, we have it.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Well, the first part of the program today, as we looked at the macroeconomy, we looked at one of the number one industries, the tourism. From now going up, we want to look at the other sectors and some of the policies we need to put in place as corrective measures for the Barbados macroeconomy going forward. Our last caller placed four things he would like to see within the first 12 months of the next administration. I would like to get some more of those. Before we can move on, I want to look at some questions and comments here in relation to the public sector, which is item number 3 for you, Dr. Worrell, and item number 4 for you, Mr. Shane Lowe. So in studio, we have the president of the Barbados Economic Society, Mr. Shane Lowe. We have tourism researcher and economist, Mr. Wayne Lovell. And we have the former governor of the Central Bank, immediate past president of the Barbados Central Bank, Dr. Deloyle Worrell. This one says, hi, I'm a public servant at a statutory body. The problem I see is maintenance in all government departments, wastage and favoritism are two other big issues. No accountability for actions. Why is it that the NHC tenants are not paying rent and the NHC is not allowed to issue notices to quit to defaulters? The transport fleet is depleted. What about our roads? There's another one here. It actually comes from the president of the National Union of Public Workers. He says, hi, I hope all is well. I can't call right now, but I need to ask a question to Dr. Worrell for me. How does he propose to objectively measure productivity in the public service? And then I'll put one more on top of that for all of you to respond to. It says, please let Dr. Worrell explain how he sees the government of Barbados reforming the public service. Every time there's an economic problem in Barbados, we have some persons like Dr. Worrell who will call for the reforming of the public service. The idea of reforming the public service is to send home public officers. Please tell them we need new ideas for development of Barbados. It is time we talk to the Pan-Africanists and the socialists in Barbados for new ideas. So let's lump three of those together. Let's call it one issue. What are we going to do in the public service? And why? Why picking on the public service?
Right. You know, the evidence of ineffectiveness and ineptitude in the public service is all around us. Let me say right up front, that I am a career public servant myself, right? And over my career, I've met some outstanding public servants. There are people that are in the public service. I've met people in the teaching service. I've met people in the health service and so on. To this day, who are outstanding public servants. But like your first commentator, they are frustrated because the things that they can see to do to make to deliver the actual services that they're employed to they are, for one reason or another, unable to do because of one reason or another. So the details would vary, okay? And so, you know, it is clear, this is not something which is as a result of the crisis. This is something which I have been talking about, you know, from the time I was appointed, because all the evidence is there. In the reports of the World Economic Organization, as I say, you know, when they talk about the major impediments to doing business in Barbados, the inefficiency of the public service. So this is something which is inhibiting the growth and effectiveness of the sectors that are growing in Barbados. Where is investment? You know, there is hundreds of millions of dollars of investment which people want to do in Barbados, which they have not done because of various inefficiencies within the public service. So the reform of the public service is not about bashing anybody. And if, in fact, the inefficiencies of the public service are an embarrassment and a source of frustration, as I say, to the extraordinary talent that resides in the public service. And we're losing talent every day because of this.
But how do we reform that? It can't just be about taking right. 15.
So this is the whole is the whole issue. You know, we must not focus on the numbers. The reason for the 1500 is because my calculations, when I worked out the amount of revenue that we are able to gain from the taxation, I'm saying in order to balance the expenditures with the revenues, the program that I have worked out is the minimum that is necessary in order to make that balance. And we have to make that balance because we don't want to be the central bank to be adding to the money supply in order to finance the government, okay? So that's the reason. But how you actually do it, it has to be done in a modern way, and it has to be done with technical assistance that to provide the expertise in the evaluation of systems and so on, which we clearly are unable to do for ourselves. You know, we have been at this business of public sector reform for 20 years. And we have proved to ourselves that we cannot make it happen. That over those 20 years, the public service has gotten worse. So we need outside assistance. And that is one of the reasons why we need to engage with the International Monetary Fund and other international financial institutions, World Bank, American Development Bank, and so on, who will give us access to international expertise on how you do public sector restructurings. As I say, it will be accompanied by things like separation packages, retraining, providing I don't want to say psychological, but you know, assistance to people to help them counseling, right? To deal with the transition and so on. Financial advice for people, how to reform their careers and so on, and a whole package of things.
We cannot do that by ourselves.
And the whole question of measurement again, we need to import expertise in measurement and in organizational systems.
When we look at the vast experience you had within organizations like the IDB and various places, and then look at the places, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, and so on, is there any strategy or any initiative that really stands out to you that really was effective in having to do any kind of work like this massive public sector restructuring?
I think a number of countries have had to face this with various degrees of success. In my own personal experience, I remember talking about separation packages. An Indian banker, he was at one time the president of the Indian Bankers Association. And he told about his experience of having to to take over a state-run bank with lots of people who really knew very little about banking and to transform it into a viable commercial bank. And, you know, you have to have so one of the things that he did, for example, in that instance was to create a subsidiary of the bank to deal with social issues. Right, and all the people who didn't have any aptitude for banking, but who were clearly, you know, sort of motivated, to do things like child care and things like that and so on. So he created a subsidiary which provided services not only to the bank, but to other associations, you know, to absorb some of those people. And others, you know, separation packages and so on. So, you know, these are not things that we have to invent.
Correct. That's what I was asking. All right, Wayne, this whole idea of the public sector, you, as a fellow economist, you've heard the proposal, let's send home 1,500 a year. Don't focus on the number, send home a minimum amount of persons away based on calculations with a separation package, hopefully, again, with some counseling, retraining, and so on. Get some people into entrepreneurship and various other areas. What are your thoughts on that proposal? You actually did say you read it, so you've got an idea of the holistic vision.
When I first read it, what jumped out to me is the need to have an honest discussion as to what is the level of unemployment that we would want to accept in the short run, because that's a given.
Right.
We would have to understand that to make these adjustments, you would have to agree that there will be a level of unemployment in the short run. Dr. World's model gives a strategy where you would get financing from the IMF to help support the unemployed, which would keep the aggregate demand pretty much up. But it would, what it would do is help the government in terms of the fiscal deficit, help correct that, which is good. And at the same time, kind of restructure the numbers that we have in the public service. But what I would say though, which is most important, that in small open economies with limited resources, the state has to play a role. I mean, add something else there. Limited resources with the kind of economic business structures that we have, which in the Barbados case, when you look at the data, the distribution and retail, is probably our biggest subsector in there. Now, but what that has though is the majority of businesses in Barbados tend to fall under that retail and distribution. Now, to have people move from one sector, come into the private sector, the difficulty is absorbing them when you have that kind of business structure there. You see? So they have to be an understanding by whoever takes up the reins in the future as to what level of unemployment we can afford to have without social dislocation and so on. Because there's no way out of unemployment.
That's my point, you see, because, and this the unemployment point is, and I'm glad you raised it, because it's a vital point, right? So you have to remember that part of my proposal is to remove the NSRL and the foreign exchange fee. That actually is going to create employment, because the foreign exchange fee has actually, and the NSRL, have increased the cost of doing business. And it has had a dampening effect on the same distribution sector. And small businesses and people who, you know, are people who are in business for themselves, okay? Beyond that, remember, the main reason you're doing this is to reverse the downslide in the foreign reserves. When you do that, you begin to rebuild confidence. Investment begins to come back. Shane mentioned the decline in construction. You know, if you get some hotels and so on, and that's going to bring back construction, more jobs, right? And So, and if you move more rapidly into renewables, which is the other area that I think that we have great potential, there actually will actually be a gain in employment. I don't think there's going to be any loss in employment.
Yeah, I think ultimately what the government will have to do is to shift its mix of expenditure. It's not so much just whether there is a deficit or not. Is so much how the deficit is comprised. So current expenditure, you have to pay for that every year. So every year you have to pay for wages and salaries, every year you have to give the hospital money, etc., etc. The challenge with that is when you have to borrow for that, you're not just borrowing today, you're borrowing tomorrow and then in subsequent years. And then you have to borrow to pay for that as well as the interest that you accumulated from the previous borrowing, right? So while people may look at it and say, well, if you cut some of the social services, if you ask people to pay for some of the social services, which might be necessary, it will have an impact on the average individual. It's already having an impact on the average individual because the average person is having to pay a higher VAT and a higher NSRL just to pay for these things. So I think one approach could be that where you do have social services that are costing the government a large amount of money, you may have to ask some people to pay for those services. And the savings that the government gets from that, they can then target those most vulnerable in society so that those persons have additional income or additional funds that they can pay for those same social services. Because however you look at it, somebody is paying, whether it's through paying taxes or paying by actually going to these places.
When I think about government and governance, to help the public understand the difficulty is that at the same time of putting these short-term measures in place, you got to put some long-term measures in place. When you listen to the newscast and we look at the statistics, and I saw some recently, 46% of the beds within the hospital is somewhere connected to diabetes and other communicable diseases. The money that costs for therapy, chemotherapy, and all the dialysis and so on. And we spend a lot of money on sickness as opposed to on health in terms of preventing. So at the same time you're doing all these short-term measures, we need to have the administration put in place measures that can save us in the long term. I just said that as a segue to go over to the next call. Good afternoon and welcome. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Corey.
Hey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to the panel as well.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
The only thing which I am going to agree with the central bank governor on is the fact that we have to go to the IMF. Okay? This program right now is way too short for me to go in about the situation. You've heard me talk ad nauseum about what we have to do in terms of the macroeconomic situation, and the only way in which it can start to be resolved is going to the IMF for all a lot of reasons which have been listed before. But one of the things which he said just now in terms of we need the outside assistance to come in to advise us about certain things. We have always had outside assistance coming in advising us about things. We have always had people with expertise who are Beijing as well, who have been trained overseas, who have lived overseas for years and know exactly what the problems are. And they have tried to make contribution or make statements as to, listen, this is what needs to be done, blah, blah, blah. And they have been stopped. That has always been the challenge. So when you have when he says that, oh, well, we need to get the outside assistance to come in to then sit to give us that assistance, the problem still remains the reason why it doesn't work because they get stopped because they're people in position of power who have the ability to change things and they don't.
I think, Carl, I think you're bang on with this one. I want to interject here because I swore to one of the principals at Public Sector Reform. He did say the same thing. He said, listen to me, you see this office needs to be brought in the office of the Prime Minister because when we try to do things, it has to do with a ranking.
Yes, ranking, Corey, so. You know, your caller has put his finger on the issue.
Corey,
and the solution...
We ain't going to lose you, just hold on, caller, just hold on your day still.
Yeah.
So, I'm getting nervous.
So let me tell you what the solution is, right?
Mm.
And it has to do with the IMF program. Because the IMF does not give you a lump sum of money.
Oh, yeah.
The IMF disperses money over a period. And there are conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying what we need to do is not to go open-handed to the IMF. We must go to the IMF with a proposal for a structural program which focuses on the reform of the public sector, which is going to be measured in terms of the delivery of services. And there, that is going to be accompanied by an action plan, which is going to be broken down with quarterly targets for achievement. And what the IMF, this is a standard thing in IMF programs, is that every quarter the IMF sends a team to the country that is in the program. And the team discusses all the targets. This is not something that would be peculiar to Barbados. This is a standard thing for all of IMF programs that have financial assistance.
And the disbursements are linked to
and
the...
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay, then they have to write a report. Mm-hmm. And that report is discussed by the board of the IMF.